are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Okay, Eric Delgado.
Hey.
Delgado is a Spanish name, right? Mexican name?
Yeah, I think the roots of the name are in Spain.
Spain, that's what I thought.
Yeah, but my dad is from Peru.
Peru. Have you ever been there?
Yeah, several times. Yeah, I got a lot of family still in the area.
What do you think of Peru? Is it pretty good? Is it pretty different?
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. It's, I think it's one of the top food destinations in the world, actually. The cuisine of Peru is so varied and so magnificent. I love eating there. And then obviously, as a tourist, you can go visit places like Machu Picchu or the Nazca Lines. There's a lot that it has to offer. But I even just go back because I enjoy spending time with family. It's a fun time.
What kind of government do they have there?
So I know that there's a whole thing going on, I think, right now with the government. I am not educated enough on the subject to be able to tell you one way or another.
Yeah. Do you feel like, you know, and back in the late 80s, I was in the Eastern Bloc, Russia, Czechoslovakia, Bulgaria. Mm-hmm. And, you know, coming from the States, I had no clue as to what kind of rights that people didn't have over there. You know, they were still coming out of, they weren't in a communist government, but they were more socialistic. But it was weird, man. As an American, I mean, at that point, I'm like in my, I guess, my 30s or something, 35. And I had no clue that, you know, when I went to talk and say something, it was very, don't say that. And I was like, why? Well, the KGB is over there and they're listening. And, you know, that was so weird for me to see how people had to live. And I don't know. I've never been to Peru. I've done quite a bit of traveling, but never Peru. I think it'd be a place I'd like to go because of the reasons that you mentioned. Did you feel like any different, other than you're in a different culture and country, do you feel like you're like not as free? And maybe that's not a very good question.
No, I think I feel very normal there. The only big difference for me is the traffic patterns of the city. All my family's in the capital, Lima. And just the way they drive there, all of the... You know, typically when you're on the road, you see all of the painted lines and we have traffic lights and stop signs. And here in the U.S., that's very much law that you follow. Over there, those are more of just like suggestions, you know, if you want to. So that was the only time I ever felt like, yeah, I'm definitely in a different place because I could never drive a car here.
Populated? Lots of people.
Yeah. No, there's lots of people. It's a pretty densely populated city. So,
yeah. And then you were born in Thailand.
I was. Yeah. So I was born in Bangkok, in the capital.
Yeah.
And I was in Thailand for 2 years with my family. And then we transitioned just south to Malaysia. And we were there for another 8 years. So my first 10 years were spent in Southeast Asia before I ever lived in the U.S. Yeah, we're not Asian at all, but that's just sort of where the family ended up.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you something. I don't know. I have been in Thailand. And you talk about a suggestion and the way people should drive. That was bizarre over there.
Yeah.
I was in, I forget just exactly where I was, but I mean, I saw women in dresses, like riding on motorcycles.
Sure.
Like on the side, it was, and people just zooming all over the damn place, and they somehow made it all happen. I didn't see any accidents when I was there.
Well, that's the thing. I think to us, it can be so jarring to see how the traffic flows in these places, but to them, that's their normal.
Yeah.
And they've got it figured out. So I think because they're so good at packing the streets with all these cars, all these, you know, motorcycles as well, or tuk-tuks or whatever vehicles they've got, just sort of all flowing together in this stream. I don't think you see as many like heavy, like accidents. You just see maybe like little bumps that nobody cares about, little dings. It's impressive. It's impressive. But I think you very much have to be used to that and recognize that as your normal to be able to actually like drive in those places.
Repetition is a motor skill that kind of applies in a lot of areas.
For sure. You know? Yeah.
But it was so busy where we were at. You couldn't even cross the street. They had overpasses you'd walk over because it was just too damn busy.
Yeah, you have to be so careful. I have a childhood memory of us probably foolishly as a family trying to just cross the street like normal when there was like a gap in traffic. Yeah. And I actually slipped and fell in the middle of the street. So my dad had to run back and pick me up. I was a kid, pick me up and like carry me quick before we got run over. That was kind of a harsh lesson in, use the overpasses to just do, or don't cross the street. It's not worth it. Just see what's on your block and stay there.
There were a lot of cool things actually in Thailand. I did like the tuk-tuk and that was fun. And I got, you could get a suit over there made for nothing. And it was like beautiful.
Yeah.
I think it's like that.
Yeah, I think last time I was there was like 3 years ago. And I think one US dollar was good for $3 in Thailand.
Yeah.
So it's not bad.
Yeah. I went there in Hong Kong and we tried to spend our money. We couldn't because the dollar was so strong. Mm-hmm. We'd go out every night and buy stuff just as much as we could. We couldn't spend our money. It was that strong. It was
fun. There you go.
You had a packet to get back on the plane. That was a nightmare.
Yeah. Okay. No, I bet.
Okay. Really? 16 months old. You made your debut. Really? Could you even walk?
I could walk. Yeah, I could walk. I mean,
what were you doing 60 months old in front of a camera?
It's very funny. It's kind of like that. Classic Hollywood tale of you're discovered in a public place.
Yeah.
So I think my mom was in a mall somewhere in Bangkok, just pushing me in a stroller. And somebody caught a glimpse of me. And admittedly, as a young Puerto Rican, Peruvian toddler in Bangkok, I didn't tend to look like a lot of the other toddlers out there. So that probably helped me stick out. But yeah, somebody caught a glimpse of me at this mall, came up to my mom and said, "Hey, I need to use your baby for this commercial we're shooting." And yeah, next thing I know, we're on set shooting a commercial. It's for this Thai baby products commercial called, I think, Cousins or Cousins, however you pronounce it. Yeah. And they had found a lady to play my mother. I was 16 months old, so I don't remember a lot of the finer details. I think she may have been American, but she had like brown curly hair like I did. And we were on set shooting. I basically just spent a lot of time crawling around, playing with toys. And no, I don't think they gave me lines. I don't think I was speaking yet, but I did a lot of like giggles. I don't even know if the giggles were mine or if they or if they dubbed in a more articulate baby. I don't even know. But you hear me giggling. And, you know, it's funny, though, from what I hear is working on that set, apparently I got along with the entire crew, all of the Thai crew. I really hit it off. We had a nice time. The only person I didn't get along with on set was the woman playing my mother. Oh. I don't know if I could just see, I just knew like, you're not really my mom.
You knew.
Yeah. So, that was the hardest time. If you go back, I actually have a clip of the commercial on my website, but it's on YouTube and you can see a scene where, a little clip where I'm like being held in her arms and she's like swaying to the side. And I think in that instant, it made it look like I was smiling, having a good time, but apparently she was just trying to keep a hold of me because I was fidgeting, trying to escape. Yeah. But they just captured that moment. I was not about her as my mom. I could see right through her.
I think there's something to that, you know, instinctively. I think babies know that.
I guess. Yeah. It was just in me. I knew something was amiss. You're trying to treat me like mom treats me, but you're not mom. There's something wrong here.
You know, you're not authentically. That feels fake.
Yeah, there you go. So I saw right through her.
Crap on you in a moment if you don't get me out of your hands.
I may have. I don't remember, but I'd have to follow up with my family on that one.
So did you get paid for that, I assume?
Yeah.
You're a professional at 16 months old.
So professional at 16 months old. I think that was the beginning of my college fund right there. It's a little Thai commercial TV star.
Hey, disclosure, how much did you make? I want to know.
I couldn't even tell you. I don't know. I probably should have been more on top of the financials at that age, but I think I was distracted as a child, you know.
I can't believe that you were distracted at 60 months old. That's crazy talk.
It's terrible.
Where did you go from there?
So, like I said, after 2 years in Thailand, we spent 8 years in Malaysia. That's where I did like my preschool, elementary school. And then when I was 10, my dad decided to move the family back to the U.S. And we were in Southern California for a couple of years. But then we spent the next 6 years in Maryland. And that's where I did like middle school and high school. That's where I graduated high school, was in Maryland. Yeah. Which was definitely a big shock to the system when you consider, you know, growing up in Southeast Asia, I had no memories of less than 80 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah. And now, what about the humidity? I was there when it was pretty humid.
Yeah. So, I mean, humidity, I was fine with it because that's all I knew. That was my normal. Humidity was fine. So living in Maryland, it got humid as in the summer, and that was fine. I was used to that. What really shocked me was the first winter that came along, and suddenly there's snow everywhere, and it's like 15 degrees plus wind chill. I learned what wind chill was, and it was rough. So and then learning what it's like to, it's just me and my sister as the kids. So naturally, anytime it snowed, I'd be the one who had to shovel the driveway. So it was just sort of a rude awakening to what life is like in the snowy areas of this country.
Yeah.
And and to this day, I am such a weakling with the cold. Even when it gets, I live in LA now, and even when it gets into the low 60s or high 50s, I'm pretty well bundled. I usually have a scarf and gloves as well, because it's a lot for me. Yeah.
You need to go into some hard training with the weather so you can change that. No, never mind. Hey, Thailand and I'll go there back to Peru. Did you learn those languages at all on any level, like fluently?
So I speak Spanish fluently because, you know, my dad was born in Peru. My mom was born in Puerto Rico. Spanish was spoken a lot in my home, and I also studied it in school to refine it. But living in Southeast Asia, English was so widely spoken. And all of the schools I attended were English speaking, whether it was a British school or an American school, that I never actually needed to learn a Thai or a, you know, Malay Bahasa. I wish I had. Again, it's like as a child, you wish you had the foresight, because to be able to whip out some of those languages now would be a wonderful skill to have. But no. So I'm bilingual, but in more common languages, none of those.
My current wife is from Holland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And she's amazing. She can speak five languages, you know, and this is when, you know, there's culture shock, because when we've been married now about 20 years, and she says, you guys in America live in a bubble. That's what she would tell me, because especially as it related to language. And I speak Portuguese, but I was raised around that, you know, around the household until 5 years of age speaking Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
But she was just amazing. She just, the way she learned different languages was just watching TV and some of the, I forget what kind of cartoon shows that were in English back then. And that's how she learned language. And then she's just fearless. You know, she doesn't, she's very confident in the way she approaches it. But it's pretty amazing when you can know several languages. I'm always in awe of somebody who can do that.
It really helps a lot. I mean, just knowing... If you're traveling to any country that speaks a language different than your own, but you are able to communicate in that language, it opens up a lot more doors.
Yeah.
Because if you're speaking with the locals, they they will communicate with you in a way that's different than like a whole like, oh, yeah. If you're trying to bounce between languages, you get a very surface level interaction. But if you can actually get in depth and communicate, it's a much more richer experience.
Yeah.
You know, I traveled to Brazil years ago. I toured a show for a couple of weeks in Brazil when I was in college. And granted, obviously in Brazil, they speak Portuguese, but it's not that different from Spanish. There are a lot of similarities to where I was able to utilize the Spanish quite a bit there. And I got a lot out of being able to communicate on a much deeper level with the people of Brazil compared to a lot of my my fellow actors in the show who were English only. So they didn't really get to, get into the meat and bones of like the culture as much as I was. Right. So,
when I went to Portugal way back when, because I had never been there, they speak a different dialect depending on what part of the country you're in.
Oh, sure.
And like in the central part of in Portugal, it's more proper than it is in the Algarve, which is where my parents and my grandparents originated from, that sort of area. So even though I knew Portuguese, it was like, I had a little bit of a time understanding them because it was just, the dialect was different.
Yeah.
But I knew enough to, you know, obviously to communicate. So that was cool, as compared to being in Eastern Europe and no one spoke English, not a person back then in the late 80s. That's, I tell you, you learn how to communicate with a pencil and a paper and kind of become an artist to get around. And that's what we did. It's actually kind of cool, you know, now that I look back at it, but it was very, very different that way.
I would imagine you got very good at drawing like a bathroom.
Yes.
And
exactly. You know, the basic needs. What can I say? The show that you were touring on in Brazil, what kind of a show was that?
So this was, I was in college, so we were doing a production of the play Our Town. And we just toured it in Brazil. I guess we had a professor at the time who was big on international travel. And I guess she just found a way to say, hey, let's stage a show and then take it to a foreign country. That way we get to still be acting, but we're also traveling and seeing the world at the same time. That's cool. So it was just one of those things. And it was great. We got to see like seven different, I think at least seven different cities within the country. We were bouncing all over the place and it was great.
Good experience. Has to be.
Oh, it's fantastic. Well, I mean, listen, as people who have traveled, you know, to different parts of the world, we know the value of of travel and being exposed to these different cultures. So, anytime I'm in a country I've never been in before, it's so exciting to see what's similar, what's different, trying all the different food. I love eating. So, I ate so much while I was there. It's just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And then what also helps too is when you go about your day-to-day life and you meet people, to this day, anytime that was back in, I think 2007, I was in Brazil. To this day, if I run into someone who's from Brazil, I will bring up the different parts I've been to. And more often than not, I've been to even the tiniest city that maybe they're from, or they're just surprised that I've been to a city so close to where they're from. And it's just like, it connects us in a different way. Cause it's like, oh, you know about my culture on a deeper level. And that's really valuable.
It's a beautiful thing. You know?
Oh, it really is.
Let's take a quick pause to tell you about something you're definitely going to want.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're going to get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief and the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
When I was in Bulgaria and I saw those churches that were built 1,000 years ago, it was like, oh my God, you know, these beautiful buildings that were built with 1,000 years ago with no equipment. It's pretty, it really opens your eyes, doesn't it?
UFOs.
UFOs, yeah, Charlie. Oh, Charlie in the background, UFOs. Okay, so when you're touring now, I'm assuming that at the age of 16 months, you got paid for this event that you did, the commercial. Now, I'm assuming that, did you do any more acting where you were getting paid along the way, or were you, like in college, you were touring, you weren't getting paid? How did that work?
So you could say that I did my paid acting work in Thailand and that commercial, and then I took a retirement for 20 years or so.
You lucky dog. Lucky dog.
Yeah. You know, I just retired. I traveled the world with my family. I just enjoyed life. And then, you know, got my education along the way. And it wasn't until 8th grade where I really started to get back into, well, I don't know if get back into is the right way, but just sort of get into performing in a serious manner, take it seriously. So I was in middle school and they were putting on a production of The Music Man. And I thought, hey, that seems like a fun musical to do. Let me audition and see if I can be a part of the show. I think it would be great to have a big role in that. And I auditioned and I ended up getting cast as The Music Man. And so suddenly I'm the lead role of this show. And I really got hooked from there. And I just continued to do the school musicals all throughout high school. And then decided that, hey, I really liked musical theater. So I decided to go ahead and study that in college. So none of this was getting paid or anything, but it was more just like, hey, this is fun. I'm just going to keep doing it. It brings me joy. And I seem to have a talent for it.
What exactly, if you can describe the feeling, what was it that hooked you? You got hooked on it. What does that mean to you?
It's a great question. I guess there's something exciting about creating something and then putting yourself in front of an audience and just sort of like sharing that. It's a very vulnerable position to just, you know, be on stage and you're there, you're acting, you're singing, you're dancing. And then just to have the reception of the audience. I don't know. I got a kick out of that. I was a very shy kid in school, very timid. I'm a natural introvert. And I guess it just offered a platform for me to sort of come out of my shell and open up. And I think I liked that because to this day, I'll still get kind of nervous or you get sort of a little bit of butterflies before you're going to do any sort of performance. But then you do it. And it's just sort of that thrill of like, oh, wow, I did that. Like I was scared to do it, but then I did it anyway. And now I feel like I did something and I'm so glad I did. Yeah. I guess, yeah, it sort of charges you in a way as opposed to just sort of staying in this comfortable state, staying in your comfort zone. I guess those are the things I was sort of picking up on. Maybe I wasn't able to articulate it in that way at the time, but I could feel it deep down inside.
So. Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it correlates with, as an athlete, mm-hmm. I liked that platform, that stage. Because it's funny how so many times you hear people that perform well in front of and get hooked, like you're saying, they are initially they're shy and timid. I've even told people before, I'm actually shy, and they laugh. They go, "You got to be kidding me," you know. But it's amazing how a person can get out of their you know, overcome that and get away from that and be able to, like what you're saying. And I think it's because there is, you have something, you have a knack, if you will, and instinctively you have a knack, and that just brings that feeling, I guess, out of you.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, so many people, there are people that are so timid that it hinders them. It keeps them from doing a lot of stuff. But it's really interesting that you can do that. And actually, with me, bodybuilding, for example, has been my passion always. And that just seems to override any kind of fear that I have, because I used to fear being in front of people, do public speaking. But I also knew that if I didn't do that, I couldn't promote my business.
Right.
And then it's, I don't know if you feel this way, but it's like once I learned in public speaking, because I think this is correlating maybe some degree with your acting. Once I was able to public speak, I didn't know that I was pretty damn good at it, because I let the fear hold me back. So, you know, the motivation had to be greater than the obstacle. The obstacle was being afraid to get in front of people, but the motivation was, if I don't do this, I can't make a business out of that. Oh, and by the way, I'm pretty good at it and I'm hooked on it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's such an excellent point, because it's, if you don't try, if you don't take that risk and do it, you are closing yourself off from the opportunity to make discoveries like that. You would never know that not only can you actually do something, but you might actually be good for it. You might actually have a talent for it. But if you never sort of take that risk and say, okay, even though it scares me, even though it feels uncomfortable, I'm going to do it anyway. You deny yourself that opportunity to discover. And then you just, I think that sort of, it can lead to falling into this trap of a sort of like, I don't know, unfulfilled, incomplete life, you know, or at least you might find yourself in a state where you're feeling like, I still feel like something's missing, but you know, I'm like, I think I have everything I need. I don't know. But there's, yeah.
That's something missing is that part of you that just really didn't believe or whatever, you know, to take that next step. It's so much easier than said than done, by the way. You know, there's no way that you can just say, just flip the switch and just go do it. You know, it doesn't work that way. But man, you're right. When you discover that, it's like, okay, now I have a little confidence. What else can I do that I can be good at? I mean, that's kind of cool, I think. It changed my life.
Oh, I know. That's huge. And that's a great point as well. It's that feeling of like, well, if I could do this, what else can I do? And maybe then you actually will actively start to chase those things that are uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because you start to get hooked on like discovering really what are your limits, or just
exactly
what else can you do? It's fun. It's exciting.
Yeah. How do you handle rejection? I mean, I have to believe that you have to deal with that as being in your profession. How do you handle that without it like totally destroying you and losing your self-confidence?
So I think there's a lot to be said about the concept of expectation, right? We can so easily create these expectations for ourselves that are often super lofty, or that whatever they are, we just get attached to it. And then we have this idea of like, oh, something is supposed to go this way, or it should be this way. And yeah, we get attached to that. And then what happens is when something doesn't go that way, it can be very crippling psychologically, because it's like, wait, but that didn't happen, but it was supposed to be like this. Like I'm supposed to have this, or it should be this way. And it's just a vicious cycle, especially when you're in an industry where, you know, you're auditioning all the time, you're putting yourself in front of people all the time, and there's so many opportunities to be rejected. So you just, you know, I've gotten so much better at it over the years. I think with anything, with repetition, you get rejected so often, it becomes like, okay, yeah, I can handle this. You get used to it. But also you free yourself from the expectation. So going in to any sort of audition or any sort of opportunity to maybe book a job or meet someone, build a relationship, freeing yourself up from that expectation so that you can just stop focusing on like the future, what doesn't actually exist yet, and just instead focus on the moment now and just be present.
Yeah.
And so when I'm auditioning, it's like, okay, this is what I have. I'm going to, you know, do the work, prepare like I know how to prepare, have fun, bring myself to it, enjoy it, and then let it go. You know, I send it out and just, you know, be satisfied in what I was able to control. And then the rest, you know, I accept that it's out of your hands. And free yourself from that expectation of because, you know, if I were to do every single audition thinking like, this is the one I got to book, I'm perfect for this. Yeah. And I'm going to book it. And then what happens? I send it off. The whole rest of the day, I'm just sitting there waiting, like, have they watched it yet? Are they...
That could drive the person crazy.
Yeah. And then you don't hear anything back that day. So you wait, well, the next day I'll hear back. And then it goes weeks. And then like eventually you reach a point where like, they didn't like me. I had it all wrong. I don't even know myself. Am I even good at this? What am I doing? I've wasted my life. Why did I spend money like training on this? What have I... Yeah. Vicious cycle. So no, you just have to, again, free yourself of expectation and... I just have fun and live in that present moment and just trust and enjoy and then let go.
Yeah.
I think that's a really long answer to your question, but I hope it made sense.
True. And it's a good answer because you got to learn, you know, there's a few things that stood out in my mind because in our sport and look, when you're in a position where you're being proactive and putting yourself out there, the, that side of it, you have to deal with it. That's just a part of, you know, getting to where you want to get is failing or rejection. You call it what you want. But I heard a couple of interviews that really helped me work through one or and a couple of people mentioning things about this. One was the Eagles. They were talking to the head honcho of the Eagles. What was his name, Charlie? The guy, the singer.
Which one? The Eagles?
Eagles, yeah. You were sleeping over there. I just caught you. Of course. Anyway, that he said what he said, basically, this, his name is really not that important. But he said, in order to get where you want to get and get as good as we got as the Eagles, you have to suck a lot. And that's, you know, something that puts things into perspective because when you look at people that have in their case have gotten so much success and fame and all that kind of stuff, you just think that they just rose to the top.
Yeah.
That, for me, that put things into, well, wait a minute, these guys, they had to suck a lot. Well, I can suck a lot too then, you know? I mean, it's just in a way that you start handling it because I would tell you, I don't know about you, the getting rejected doesn't change how much it hurts. It's just, I change the way I react to it now.
Sure.
It still hurts. I take it personal, but I'm able to handle it in a way that it's not, you know what I mean? I can make it work for me.
Yeah.
So what can I do, you know, to maybe be better? Where is it that I can look at instead of being all this discouraged and distraught and all the things that you're talking about?
Yeah, I think perspective is huge. And what you're talking about, like, you know, that idea of like, hey, you know, be ready to just suck and suck and suck. One thing I thought about a bit more recently was it relates to that. It's this idea of not being afraid to fail. Right. And so any opportunity that comes up, it's like, okay, I'm going to, you know, do what I can. And, you know, if I fail at it, fine. And just allowing yourself the opportunity to fail, yeah. I think is actually very powerful because then you're actually doing it and trying it as opposed to that thought of like, oh, well, if I were to do this, I could fail. So it's not even worth doing. Yeah, and then you just stay where it's a trap. Yeah. And what I found is over the years in my career, the more and more I've just put myself out there and allowed for the possibility of failure, there's definitely been plenty of failure, but I found that the scale of the types of projects I've worked on that I've been able to fail on have just consistently gotten higher.
Right.
So when I started, I was failing at this very small, like level, small scale. And now I'm just like, Like, for example, the things I'm auditioning for that I'm failing, it's like, wow, I'm failing for like really awesome projects. This is amazing. Yeah. And if I can just keep working, eventually I'm going to be failing for like the biggest things. And it's just a weird thing, because it's like, inevitably there are going to be successes there. But if you're not afraid to fail, then you just sort of keep growing and building, and you realize, oh, okay, well, failure is just in a sense like an interpretation. Yeah.
And you know, but for somebody to get and go down your path to that, success, you are dealing with a lot of stuff that you're like I said, not everybody can put that into a something that becomes positive. You're really looking at how positive that failure is.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's not to say that, as you said, rejection exists. We're still human. We still feel things. We still get down.
Right.
And we don't need to beat ourselves up for being human. But the key is being, I think, the awareness of these perspectives and the ways in which you can alter your view so that it goes from something where it's like, okay, yes, this sucks. I acknowledge it sucks. I don't like it. But then being able to spin it in a way that then becomes constructive, where you learn from it, you grow from it, and then allow it to become a positive is important.
Yep.
Because you know, none of us are robots. Yes, we have feelings. Still don't like getting rejected. Yes, there's still projects that even recently that I've auditioned for. I'm like, I'm so good for this, and you don't get it. And it's like, but I will say, with the practice, I definitely don't get as crushed as I did years back.
And it's nice to be able to create tools that you can use, because you'll use those lessons that you're learning now and those tools, you use that throughout your whole life. You
know? Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Dividends for sure. You're a proficient singer and a dancer. So how does this all work into your acting? I mean, are you somebody who wants to be an actor like for certain roles, or are you wanting to be an actor in dancing roles or singing roles? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So like I mentioned before, I did a lot of musicals, you know, in high school, and that made me decide to go ahead and pursue that in college. A big reason for that is I always enjoyed music and all aspects of it. So I really enjoyed to sing. I really enjoyed dancing. I also play saxophone. So I was in a jazz band for, a number of years. I love all of that. And the fact that I could put it all together in this medium called musical theater, it just made sense for me to pursue that in college. Okay. Now, as far as the career side of things, I always saw myself since a kid wanting to be in the movies, not so much wanting to be on Broadway doing that. It's not to say that I wouldn't love to work on Broadway and perform in that space. I love the idea of that, but I knew when I was graduating college that like I wanted to go to LA and hit Hollywood. And what I ended up doing was deciding like, okay, well, I have these skills and I'm going to allow them to just be special things that I have in my tool belt that I can offer when needed out here in, in projects in Los Angeles on camera. Yeah. And, you know, I've had a few opportunities where I've done some dancing and choreography and some opportunities where the singing has come into play and it's helped. I mean, even, you know, recently just booking a show like WandaVision, which was this huge, huge show on Disney Plus, and which, you know, when it was out, it was the number one show on TV for weeks. It was great. That was a role that I got because I had the ability to dance, specifically tap dance. And that was something that obviously, you know, I had trained in, learned over many years, but I never imagined that something like that, a skill like that, would end up putting me into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But it did. And, you know, it was a wonderful reminder of the value of having these special skills, these special tools that are unique to you that you can bring that maybe not everyone else can. Cause that's just another way that you can bring unique value to projects and to people you work with.
Yeah. So. And I understand what you're saying. But also let me say, like, in sport, for example, and how your physiology works, your body has an amazing ability to multitask. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that it's the most efficient way to get to be as good as you possibly can in a sport, if that makes any sense. And so even though that you're, I think it's, you know, it's obviously it's paid off for you to know these specialty things like the tap dancing and that kind of stuff. But do you think that you have to, at some point, that you have to compartmentalize what you're doing to further your career? Or, you know, I'm trying to understand, like, how you think that you're going to go forward, you know, with your career. And do you want to hone in on something that's just real? You're focusing now on one thing, like a dramatic actor or a comedic actor, something like that, maybe.
You know, I think it's I think the honing in is really in just, it's kind of like honing in on yourself and just like, okay, what makes me tick? What works for me? What is it that I can uniquely offer as me? And then any sorts of those external things can supplement that. You know, just by nature of me coming to LA and pursuing a career on camera, I very much put the focus in the serious acting, in a much more dramatic acting space. So yeah, the singing elements, the dancing elements, they were there, but they weren't things that I was honed in on as focused on. They were just things that I had and they could whip out. I definitely had to sort of focus more in just like the dramatic acting and going there and just for me learning the craft, coming from a theatrical background. I didn't know what to do in front of a camera. Yeah. So coming to LA, it was a really big learning process of just developing all of that. So yeah, in a sense, I did have to, yeah, I guess the word you used was what, compartmentalize. Yeah. and into like the serious acting side of it and just understand how to do that. So that I can develop a degree of comfort, a degree of understanding to where I could then weave back in those special skills that I have as needed.
I mean, because kind of what you're talking about in bodybuilding, we have like a core group of exercises that we hone in on that always work. In bodybuilding, it's about building muscle.
Yeah.
So as we're learning, which they call that the core group of exercises, as we learn that in our career, that's what we focus on. But we're constantly working on new. It's kind of like with you. This I like to correlate stuff with bodybuilding and like the industry you're in, because what you're saying is that you're focusing and honing in, but you got these other things that you can still, you know, keep working on to add to your core, you know, that ends up being your foundation, I guess. Is
what yeah. And, you know, I think too, it relates physically what you're talking about in that I've always had to keep myself in just good, like physical shape. And a good like level of health so that I could be prepared to offer whatever is needed in any moment. I've had to do all sorts of things for projects where I've had to, you know, I've had to fight people, roll around, do this, you know, a little bit of stunt work in addition to like, you know, any sort of dancing or singing. Even in WandaVision, we shot that during the pandemic. And I had not been actively tap dancing for quite some time, but I still had the tap shoes. I still had the training inside and my body was still capable of doing the things that were required so that when I could show up, you know, they actually didn't have an on-set choreographer. So I showed up on set and they said, okay, cool. Choreograph a full routine for us. Really? And we're going to put you on this, you know, like rickety stage that probably wasn't the safest dancing surface. And then we're going to shoot it. So the fact that, one, I was physically just ready to do that and was able to do that in a moment's notice, I think just goes to show like keeping, I guess, the core you primed and ready. Because if I had been someone who's like, yeah, well, you know, 10 years ago when I was doing more formal tap classes and when I was like 30 pounds lighter, I could do that. And oh, you need me to do all this now? Okay. Yeah, I think I can still do that. Can I lose 30 pounds in 30 seconds? You know, can I stretch a little, try to figure out? It's a disservice. So I think that kind of goes back to keeping, like honing in on you and just keeping the core you've primed and ready so that you can do that. So I think that I tried to relate that to what you're talking about, that the core exercises that you have so that you're ready to go with those other things.
All right, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're gonna get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief and the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
It's a very smart approach, I think. And then what's interesting about your physiology is we know this through training is that once you've gotten yourself into a certain condition, like you have in tap dancing, once you've gone there, it's forever imprinted in your DNA. It just takes a little bit of repetitions and you're right back.
Exactly.
Compared to somebody who's never done it before. So that's what I'm saying. It's a very smart thing that you do because when you need it, you've got it pretty immediate.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. I was amazed at how quickly it all came back.
Yeah.
And not only it's all coming back, but to have it all come back and to the point where you're ready to go in front of these, you know, these very expensive cameras, this ginormous Disney Marvel set with all these very wealthy, important eyes staring at you to be able to just do it. It's also very empowering to know that, okay, if you keep yourself, you know, in line, in check, in that way, that you can just bring it back, even at the at the highest stakes possible. Exactly. So and it's really cool.
I understand. I mean, so like in my industry, so many people they don't stick with their program, and they get very disappointed when they quit because they feel like they've quit on themselves and everything has gone it's for naught. But when I tell them, look, you've been to a certain spot. It's just a matter of just some repetitions and the way your physiology adapts to a regimen, whether it be a dance regimen or an exercise regimen is 21 days. You'll come right back. So it's pretty,
yeah,
cool, you know? So it's interesting how we, you know, there's similar things that go on, even though you're in this world in Hollywood. I have to tell you, I'm just really amazed by you actors that are able to perform in front of a camera and do it in a way that you can make it look easy. I am just amazed about that. You know, I've talked about this before on my show. I had the opportunity to do an audition one time and, you know, I thought it was going to be a lot easier than it was until they said, are you ready? Did you learn your lines? Action. And I just said, you know what? I choked. I couldn't even, it was like maybe 10 words. It was a bit part that I was going to do. And I thought right there, I knew for sure I did not want to be an actor because it wasn't as easy as I thought it was going to be.
It really isn't.
There's a lot to it. You know, it's not just reading lines. It's far from that.
It's amazing how much work needs to go into making things appear easy and effortless and organic. You're absolutely right.
A lot of work physically and mentally, you know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. But hey, I commend you for giving it a try. Kind of like circling back to what we talked about earlier, being willing to take the risk, stretch the comfort zone so that you have the opportunity to discover things that you have a natural talent for is amazing. But you can also discover things that maybe maybe are just not as right for you, exactly. But at least you get the certainty of knowing that, as opposed to living your life wondering like, oh, I probably could have done this. I wish I had tried that. You don't have that regret now. No, you're free of that. It's like, you know what? Hey, I had the thought of trying it once and I actually did try it, hated it. And now I can confidently say, I gave it a try. It's definitely not for me. Respect to all you who do it. So
what you said is also true, because when I was an athlete in college, I got hurt and I used that being injured as, oh, maybe this, because I loved athletics. I wanted to be a pro athlete and I had some injuries. And I was kind of burned out. And I used that injury to say, maybe this is a sign that I should just, you know, stop playing football, you know. But I want to tell you something that ate at me for so long, because of what you were just talking about. I wonder what if that, what if rolling around in my head, because what the translation was that is I quit on myself. I was afraid to take that next step. And I promised myself that after that incident, that if I ever got that chance to have that passion and buzz for something, because I did for sport, I would not question it. I would give it everything that I had, and I would never let myself down again. And it, not all I did, the difference was I tried to be as the best that I can be, do the most that I can, and walk away from the game saying I did everything that I possibly could. You got to feel good about that, even though it doesn't work out sometimes, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's all about taking care of the things that you can control and releasing everything else, you know? So if we're doing the best we can, you know, you approach it honestly, with intensity, with your effort, and just do something where it's like, hey, I gave myself to this in a way that I am, you know, in a way that makes me proud.
Yeah.
That's the win right there.
It is.
That is very much the success. Yep. Everything else is just extra. What comes out of that, how you can't control how other people will receive it. You can't control how what the response will be, but that's totally okay. That's not your job.
It's a hard life lesson, but it's a good one. I tell you that right now. In your career, WandaVision, you've mentioned this a couple of times. Is that kind of your, as of right now, WandaVision, is that your big, big moment so far in Hollywood?
You know, it's definitely the biggest name credit I've got right now, because, I mean, it's the Marvel Cinematic Universe, so that's just just about everybody knows Marvel. They know about the Avengers movies. They know these superheroes, and so to be able to be a part of that, even in such a small capacity. You know, I was on set, I think, for like 10 days working there, as you know, with the other actors. And again, the work I did at choreographing a whole dance with my fellow dancer, she and I choreographed together, and then putting a whole routine and shooting it over multiple days through different angles. There was a lot of stuff there, and, you know, inevitably in the cutting room floor, it gets trimmed down to where you only saw us for a few seconds, but there was such a big contribution there. It was very fulfilling, very exciting. But that's definitely, yeah. I mean, having a credit like that is huge, because now, I'm forever known as one of the WandaVision tap dancers. I'm in the official Marvel Wikipedia page, right. And like also the Disney Wikipedia library for my contribution to that. And it's exciting, it's fun, and it's something I wear. You know, and now I've been able to get to know different like Marvel fan groups, fan fiction groups, or I have some fans from the official Marvel fan club in Costa Rica. It's been cool to sort of experience that and do that. But, you know, and it was interesting that happened shortly after I shot the movie. I had shot the movie Monster Hunters before that. And I had a larger role in that film. And that was a movie starring Tom Sizemore. You know, it's a fun sci-fi movie type deal where we're hunting aliens, and I played one of the soldiers in that, and that was also that's also been sort of like a big thing for me. And I've even been able to grow a little bit of a following just from my participation in that, because there are, you find that if you work on these different projects, especially ones, you know, like Marvel or in the sci-fi space, there are people who are just super fans for these different genres, and they will just eat that up. So, and they want to know, I don't know, they suddenly, like, you have people who want to know more about you just because you were involved in whatever size and capacity on these different projects. So it's been a cool ride. And it's interesting that those highlights all took place during this pandemic, which I would never have predicted. Yeah. But it's also like, again, you never know where life's going to take you. I'm very grateful for the opportunities I've had, despite the external circumstances. And I'm just continuing to ride the wave, but also continuing to, what do they say, pound the pavement. I'm auditioning all the time now for the next big thing. So
with that being said, and kind of winding this our interview, our show up anyway, what's next for you? Is there anything that you, I mean, maybe you don't like to reveal this, but is there anything that you kind of secretly auditioning for that you'd like to see yourself go in that direction?
You know, I'm going to be shooting a couple independent projects. I'm supposed to shoot a feature later this year, and then a really cool a short project at the beginning of next year. So those are things I have happening. And then I've auditioned for a lot of pretty large scale projects recently that I probably can't talk too much about. But one of which was to play like the younger version of a pretty well-known movie star. And I mean, it's just a matter of continuing to
pound the pavement,
and to take advantage of all these opportunities.
Well, let me tell you something. I can tell from talking with you that you're somebody who's prepared. You know, my coach used to tell me, look, and this, again, life lessons, you know, when you're an athlete, you're out there playing your first string, you're going to have some rough patches and you might even get benched. And I did. But my coach always said, always be ready on the sideline because you're going to get another shot at this. And I can tell by talking to you that you're that person. You're ready, willing and able. And it's just a matter of time. That's my sort of my analogy for you on this.
Thank you. Yeah. No, that's how I feel. I'm like, if I got a call right now, they needed me on set later today. I'm like, okay, cool. Let me just put my shoes on. Let's go.
No, I can tell that. Anyway, listen, I really do appreciate you coming on our show. I always like learning more about people from all walks of life. It's fascinating. And I think that you've mentioned that in the show. It's just really cool to be able to get to know you. And I wish you the best of luck in your career.
Leo, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. Muito obrigado.
Sí, señor. Muito bem, por favor. Okay, sounds good, Eric.
All right, you take care.
Leo, bye-bye now.
Thanks so much. Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.